Thank you very much. Very convenient. What we will do is just to point out to you the documents, and if you can number them in that order, then we will be off. The first one, and I will just indicate to you, right, demonstration is, number one is the black and white, which says interdepartmental report, criminal law, sexual offense, this one. We have it, it's marked as one. The first page, the cover, then it starts with, the second page starts with focus areas of the presentation, right? That's number one. Number two is the color one, okay? It says interdepartmental report, common law. It's the same like the black and white, but it's just in color. Right, that's number two. Then number three is the one with the president on the cover. You all have it? The president on the cover, also in color. That's number three. Number four is a demonstration of the sexual offenses court. It's the lady in front of the cover, also in color. Right. That's four. And then five is statistics in color, SEPs, FCS units. That's five. Right? Then six. Must this indicate whether you have six? Six is what it says in color, does government have enough resources to curb sex crimes? I suspect you may not have this. Number six, you have it? Yeah, members have it. There may be one that doesn't. Here in front, Ms. Jayla doesn't have. If you can give her a copy as well as to Moma, Drassen and Mr. Yankee. Right. This is six. You can mark them. As well as Mr. Vaughan, I think. Yeah, also needs a copy. Your copy is being distributed right now. And then lastly, seven is called the National Register for Sexual Offenders. The National Register for Sexual Offenders, that's number seven. Right. That's the order we have. And I think Advocate Kambula's got her presentation on the board. Her number one is, of course, in color. Don't worry about that. You've got your number one. Thank you very much. Let's proceed. Sorry. Yes, Ms. Ruffin? You can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for laying it out. Just for record purposes, in the committee section, we only received five parts. So now we actually have seven parts. So some of us, like myself, have not read as a part, and I would like to be able to read before I can engage with the presentation. So I will only be able to just listen to the parts that we did not receive beforehand.
I know that we will, of course, when we get to that portion, we will indicate to the presenter.
Sounds off the site. But let's proceed, Kambula.
Just to say, as far as the earlier issue of the report for Mr. Janki's benefit, I have here, which I'm handing to the chair, copies of two letters, one to the speaker, one to the chair of the MCOP, tabling the report. And there's a stamp from the speaker's office saying received 30th of September, clerk of the papers.
Thank you, dear. We will note that. That is the report that has been handed in.
Thanks.
And Proskusa, Advocate Kambula, are you ready? You can proceed.
I'm seeing, okay, so it means that it's working. Yeah. There was one court that has come out, so I thought that is. Thank you, Chairperson. And we would also like to apologize to the members for the technical challenge that we had, and hopefully we will not be having the repeat. First is to say that the presentation, as we have indicated, that it will be focusing as the letter is requested, the letter is requested us to, the invitation, it requested us to present on the interdepartmental annual report on the implementation of the sexual, of the criminal law, sexual offences and related matters amendment act of 2007. But then it mentioned the NPA and DOJ. But then the, what I want to just to put as an emphasis is the interdepartmental report, it covers nine stakeholders. So we have tried then to cover all of them. So the scope of the we will also be presenting on the scope on the legislation and also looking at the criminal justice system through the eyes of the survivor, because we think that that's quite important, and also how big is the problem and the reportable performance. The reportable performance is as was tabled in Parliament by the different stakeholders, and also the limitations that we are experiencing as government. Now, moving to the third is why we are here. Section 65, subsection 3 of the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act places a responsibility on the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services to table individual reports, not all of them, not consolidated, but individual reports of the different stakeholders. And the different stakeholders are outlined by the Act in Section 63. So the reports that we're going to be presenting on are the one that's a culmination of the performance of the different departments in the previous financial year. These are the departments that Section 63 of the Act says that must submit their reports to the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, so that the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services then tables all of them in Parliament. So we have the Department of Justice and the Correctional Services, the National Prosecuting Authority, SAPS, Department of Health and Social Development. But as you know that if we talk about sexual violence, then it includes other stakeholders that the Act does not require them to table their reports. So we have then requested those who are willing to do so to table their reports. Then that is why you see the basic education, because with the basic education there has been a lot of sexual violence happening at schools, despite the fact that the Act does not require them to table their report. So, but they have included it. We also have the traditional affairs, which is part of COFTA, and also legal aid that is part of us having submitted their reports. If we talk about sexual violence is related to a number of pieces of legislation in our country. For instance, we have the Domestic Violence Act. The Domestic Violence Act prohibits sexual abuse between people who have domestic relationships. So what it means is that it is also a piece of legislation that is relevant to sexual violence in the country. So we also have the Children's Act. Children's Act also does have a provision that says that the children should not be sexually abused. So it also makes it then relevant to the discourse of sexual violence in terms of stopping it. And then we also have the Older Persons Act. The Older Persons Act even criminalizes a sexual abuse perpetrated against older persons. So it also makes it relevant. And then we also have the trafficking in persons that also speaks to sexual violence, and also the protection from the harassment act that is also relevant. And then the actual act that is making us to be here, which is the Criminal Law and Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act of 2007. So all of these pieces of legislation are speaking to issues to a certain extent, some of them, of sexual violence, but we have the main piece of legislation, which is the one that we have come to present. That does not end there. We also have other legal frameworks. We do have the Service Charter for Victims of Crime of South Africa, which gives the victims of crime, including the victims of sexual offenses, 7 rights. It stipulates 7 rights. But it is not it's not carrying the same weight that one would be getting from the Constitution. I will explain that. That with the Constitution, you have a Section 35 that stipulates expressly the rights of the accused person. But the same Constitution, it has Section 9 that says that everyone should has got a right to equal protection of the law and the benefit of the law. But then you don't have in the Constitution a separate provision that speaks to the rights of the victim of crime, as it is with Section 35. So one would look at it and say that maybe the Constitution is actually not responding entirely in the same way as it should with the rights of the accused person, and therefore might be, if it says that everyone has got a right to the protection of law and then do not state the rights separated, the provision that will be stipulating the rights of the victim, then it's an anomaly that will need to be fixed, because we cannot have the country in seeking to redress the challenge. We have the Service Charter for the Victims of Crime, but the Service Charter is not of the same level as the Constitution. It does not have the same legal teeth that is carried by the Constitution, because the Constitution is the supreme law of the country. Then we also have the National Development Plan, and also the Presidential Summit Declaration against Gender-Based Violence and Femicide of 2019, which is also a document that we as a country now is implementing, because it does have provisions that speaks then to gender-based, to sexual violence. If we talk about gender-based violence, sexual violence constitutes gender-based violence. So it's part of the family of the crimes that build up what we call gender-based violence and femicide. As we have seen in our country, many women have died, but who are the victims of femicide, but they will be sexually violated first before they are killed. So sexual offenses therefore falls within the family of the crimes that constitute gender-based violence and femicide. Then we also have the National Policy Framework on the Management of Sexual Offences Matters, which then was tabled before this Parliament in August 2013. It is a national policy framework that the Act requires. Section 65 of the Act requires the Department to table, to put together this national policy framework. And now we are in a process of amending it so as to align it with the Presidential Summit Declaration. Despite all these pieces of legislation that we have in the country, South Africa was criticized by UN to say that South Africa, you've got brilliant pieces of legislation, but you are failing to bridge the gulf between paper law and action. But of course, as we know, that especially when you deal with the issues of GBVF, South Africa is not alone in the globe. It is a challenge in a number of countries with the implementation of the programs that relate to GBVF. So We have seen then in our country a number of protests by women getting to the streets and marching against issues of gender-based violence and femicide, despite the fact that as a country we've got brilliant pieces of legislation. And I think that the one that actually was a turning point, it was held by the total shutdown on the 1st of August 2018. It was not only the total shutdown that took to the streets on that day, but also the young women's desk of the ANC also took to the streets in the 9 provinces. The difference was, with the total shutdown, they handed their memorandum of complaints to the president in his capacity as the president of South Africa, and then the young women's desk of ANC, they took it to the president in his capacity as the president of the ANC. So all of these, when they were put together, having considered by the interim steering committee, but this is what I will be talking about as I move on. What is it that women of South Africa are saying about the criminal justice system? As we all know that they have been chanting and saying that the criminal justice system is failing us, and saying that it's failing us on a number of issues which we thought that as we are presenting, we need to also bring this to the fore. And because these are the issues that as the committee that we are looking at. The first that is quite paramount, they are saying that they are shouting against the poor implementation of the laws and the programs, and also the secondary traumatization that is experienced at the service point, meaning that there is less or no information to the survivors at the service point, and the long and the neglected queues at the service points, the insensitive treatment that they receive, some of them, and also the delayed or the poor police investigations that they experience, together with the repeated case postponements, and also the high nolle prosecute decisions, which is the I decline to prosecute decisions, charge withdrawals that are set sometimes made without prior consultation, the unresolved one-stop support services infrastructures, which include shelters, Thuthuzela Care Centers, the Sexual Offences Courts, the Kuseleka One-Stop Centers, and so on, and also the poor referral system in the criminal justice system. And the other thing that was also raised, that they continue to raise, is the lack of accountability at the service point. So this is how then the crime victim looks at the criminal justice system. And these are the things that we are looking at addressing. It is those the memorandum that the president received on the first of August 2018, that then made him to respond to one of the demands of the memorandum that he received, was that he must host a national summit against gender-based violence and femicide, which, as we know, that it occurred on the 1st and the 2nd of November, 2018, and the Department of Justice was requested by the presidency to be the implementing agency of the summit, and we did that, I think that with success. And then after the summit, then with all the deliberations that took place there, then we developed the presidential summit declaration that is considering then all the challenges, and some of those challenges are the ones that I have mentioned on the previous slide of what the women of South Africa would like the criminal justice system not to look like. So the summit declaration, the President signed it together with the civil society, as I had said, on the 28th of March 2019. Now, how big is the problem? If you go to the annual report, you will see that it's got a number of pages there under the report of the Department of Justice that highlights then a number of performance in terms of the figures that we have collected in sexual offences, that is the cases that we have put, that we have been collecting at our courts using the integrated case management system. Now, if you look at this slide, then you will see that Gauteng recorded 1,537 new matters of sexual offences, and it's followed by KZN having recorded 1,161 new matters. And we also have the Eastern Cape coming the third and having recorded 897 new matters, and then followed by you also have then the Free State Free State having recorded 974, and with Free State it's not the practice for Free State to be amongst the four top provinces in sexual violence. So it's a new province to feature in our top four. So we also have then the Eastern Cape being featuring there. So usually it will be Gauteng followed by KZN, and then you have your Eastern Cape, and then the Western Cape being the fourth. But in the previous financial year, we saw the Free State taking number three. So these are the new matters, meaning that these are the new cases that all these courts, the courts in these provinces have registered. And then now you see the next columns is speaking to the cases that have been disposed. And we see then a Gauteng leading, and then followed by KZN, and so on. And having then the Western Cape coming the third in the number of withdrawals. And then the third is the last two columns, they are about the number of cases that are outstanding. And we have a total, when we, at the end of the previous financial year, the total was 10,981. So what it means is that if you compare with the previous financial year, you will see that with the previous financial year, that is 2017-2018, in 2018-2019, we registered an increase in the number of sexual offences matters in the country. The Department of Justice also then identifies the top 10 of these courts nationwide. And this is about helping us as a department to shift the resources where they are mostly needed. So you will see then that Welcome, which is in Free State, was leading in registering as a court now. SOC is an acronym for Sexual Offences Court. So Welcome is already a Sexual Offences Court, and it led with 233 new matters, then followed by Bloemfontein, and we saw then the Johannesburg Sexual Offences Court coming in, and followed by PAL. So these are our top 10 in terms of the courts that have registered and the highest number of new matters in sexual offences. And then we also collected in the top 10 in terms of the courts where many charges were withdrawn of sexual offences. And Welkom came first, followed by Johannesburg and Bloemfontein. And also the courts then that have actually had a high performance in terms of disposing of those cases and having the highest outstanding caseload, Welcome came first, followed by Western Cape and also Bloemfontein.
But what you see here
on these slides is that most of these courts, so that is the top 10, are already sexual offences courts. So now as a department we are looking at upgrading Benoni and as well as Wynberg in Gauteng as a sexual offences court, and also the Mbombela that also featured amongst the top 10. Because this is the practice. We look at where the pressure points are in terms of the caseload, and then we upgrade that court into the sexual offences court as one of the criterion that we follow in establishing sexual offences courts in the country. Now, Chairperson, if you look now at the crime statistics that was published by SAPS, it sort of agrees with what the increase that we have experienced in the number of cases that were registered, because as the courts we experienced an increase in the previous financial year in the numbers of the sexual offences courts that were registered, that is the new matters. So SAPS in 2017-2018, they reported that their police stations received 50,108 new charges of sexual offences. It's not new cases, it's new charges. I will explain that. And then they also, in 2018-2019, their police stations recorded 52,420 new charges, and that brought us to an increase of 4.6 in the new charges that were reported in all police stations. The difference with SAPS and us, that is our courts in terms of our statistics, is that SAPS records charges. So what it means is that in one police docket, there might be four charges of sexual offences. And when that police docket then is taken to our court, it will be counted as one case, whereas SAPS has registered it as four charges. So that is the variance then that you see in the picture of the statistical outcomes that we have, that the variance in the collection of the statistics with our courts. And also then, SAPS will record four charges, and when the case comes to the police docket, comes to our courts, then the prosecutor might decide to charge, to use one charge instead of the four charges, based on the evidence that is contained in the police docket. But then what would happen is that then that information will not be reflected in the SAPS CAS system, that is the system that they are using to collect the statistics. So then there is that variance that is there, which we are actually looking at ways of bridging the gap, so that we are able then to report in a similar or the same way in terms of the numbers. But one thing that came out there is that they also reported an increase, as we have also identified an increase. And that means is that as the numbers now come to court, then you see that they are going down, because the court accounting cases are not counting charges yet. Now, coming to the reportable performance, which is now moving on a presentation of the performance of the departments in terms of the reports that they have submitted to the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services to table in Parliament. First is to say that we have governance structures that are that give oversight and are also monitoring the performance of government in the implementation of this piece of legislation. The first is the JCPS ministers. Section 65 of the Act requires the Minister of Justice, before tabling the reports, to consult with the different ministers responsible for all these departments that are mentioned in this slide, all of them that are having the responsibility to report. So he consults with all of them before he reports, he tables the reports in Parliament. So that is then, that makes then the JCPS ministers to be involved to give oversight in the implementation of this legislation. Then you also have what we call the Directors General Intersectoral Committee on the Management of Sexual Offences Matters, which is a committee that is chaired by the DG of Justice, and it also has the representation of all the departments that the Act has listed in section 63 as the reporting departments. We talk about the DOJ, all of those that are mentioned earlier on. But then the DGISC has expanded its representation, as I have mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, to include other stakeholders like the Department of Basic Education and also the Department of Higher Education, Science and Technology, and also COCTA is also part of the, because we want also to monitor the management of cases of the survivors who are based in rural communities, so as to ensure that they receive the equitable support services, and also the Department of Women as well, women, youth, and persons with disabilities is also a stakeholder of the Directors General Intersectoral Committee. So it has expanded then, and now we are looking at including a GCIS. A letter has already been put together so as to invite them as well, so that they are part of this committee. And this committee also then has a technical intersectoral committee, which I am chairing, and it has the same representation. What makes it different, the Technical Intersectoral Committee, which gives technical support to the Directors General Intersectoral Committee, is that it also has the representation of the civil society organizations. They are also part of this structure. So the Technical Intersectoral Committee is therefore multi-sectoral, as required by the Presidential Summit Declaration. Then you also have the JCPS Development Committee, which finds even its visibility at all levels. You find it at the national level, you find it also at the provincial level, then it also then it gives oversight in all the local structures and the provincial structures that we have that deal with sexual offences. So what it means is that as a country, we have structures at all levels of administration, national, provincial, and also local structures. The local structures are chaired by the judiciary, and that's where you find also the NPA participating, staffs participating, and other departments, the Department of Health also participating in the local structures. Local structures, that's where the action is. And they also then report to the provincial structures, and the provincial structures report to the national structures. And the national structures have the chairpersons of the provincial structures represented there, so as to cascade the decisions that have been taken at national level down to the provincial structures and from the provincial structures down to the local structures. So as to ensure that we have a seamless implementation of the Act. Now, in terms of the performance, that is the performance that you will find then. This is the consolidated performance you will find in the annual reports that have been tabled. That the departments have put together infrastructures that offer victim support to the victims of sexual offenses. The reason is you cannot, when you deal with a victim of sexual violence, a chairperson, sexual violence is quite intrusive. It violates their dignity. It violates their privacy. And it is one offense that leaves a victim with emotional challenges and sometimes with a conflict. Some will experience ambivalence. Do I report this case to police or do I keep quiet? Because we have also found that many survivors of sexual violence have been violated by people that they know. So it is, there's a lot of sexual violence within domestic relationships. So that makes them, some of them, make it difficult for them to come into the system. Because I'll be exposing my husband, I'll be exposing my son who has raped me, I will be exposing the uncle of my child who has raped my child. So you experience a number of those emotional challenges that they have when they come into the system. And some you will find that they experience the post-trauma stress disorder, and they will have a poor self-esteem that makes them to feel inadequate to come and report. And some will feel that if I come and report, what if I will be humiliated, embarrassed? What if they do not believe me? What if then what if I experience further retaliation from my rapist or from the person who has abused me? What if the neighborhood would know that I have been raped? So it's a number of those issues, and some would even have it's just one of the psychological impacts that they will experience. Others will experience sexual dysfunctionalities after they have been raped, and some will experience, as I said, that the poor low self-esteem that makes them to look down upon themselves and think that they are incapable of taking any action. So as government then, in responding to the victims of sexual offenses, we cannot respond to them in the similar way as a person who has come to court to say that my car has been hijacked and I need the perpetrator to be brought to be prosecuted. That is when you come to the courts, and all of that, because of all these emotional baggages that they carry when they come to the system. So we have to have then a criminal justice system that is responsive to their emotional needs. So that is why, as they come into the system, SAPS has put together the victim friendly rooms, where then the statements are taken in privacy, because there's embarrassment in sexual violence, which is a stigma that is put by our society. And it's something that we need to reverse, because the one who must be stigmatized is the perpetrator and not the survivor. But the current situation is that it is the victim who is stigmatized for something that you are not responsible for and you did not invite. So coming from SAPS then, you have the victim friendly rooms, and SAPS then have increased their victim friend rooms during this performance that we are reporting on by 14. And at the end of the financial year, they had 1,071. And the victim friendly rooms, they provide a secure space, and victim friendly room, and that's a response to the emotional needs of the victim as they are taking their statements. And then you also have then the Thuthuzela Care Centers that are established by the NPA working with the Department of Health. And in the country we've got 55, and during this reporting time they did not have an extra performance. And the reason is because they did not have enough human capital so as to roll out then the section of the Thuthuzela Care Centers. The Thuthuzela Care Centers, they offer medical, legal support. That's where you find that PEP is done, and they have the rape kits for the survivors, and they collect then the information from the victims in a sensitive environment. And then we also have then the Department of Health as designating the health care facilities. That it is in terms of Section 29 of the Act, it requires then the Minister of Health to designate these public health facilities. And they are also intended to provide support services. They collect a PEP for the survivors, from the survivors, provide the PEP services, and they also then conduct the compulsory testing of the sex offenders, because we know, Chair, that some of the perpetrators they violated the victims without protection. And we are not oblivious of the incidence of HIV. So that is why then the Act then compels the sex offenders who have had sexual violation without protection to be tested. That is the HIV testing. So in 2018-2019, they had a performance of 2. Adding to the 279 to bring it to 281. Then we also have the shelters, the Department of Social Development. It added more, 12 shelters to bring the total. And it's 112, so I'm sorry, that's the miss. It's a typo, it was supposed to be 100. They had 100 in the previous financial year. So the total now is 112. And also the white doors that are also providing support services to the victims. And also the Kuseleka one-stop centers that are also providing the support services to the victim. Yes, they did not have performance in 2018-2019, so they are still standing at 8. And we also have the sexual offenses courts that we started as a Department of Justice to establish in 2013. And in the previous financial year, that is this reporting period, we increased the number by 15 to bring the total to 89 at the end of the financial year. And also the correctional services, they have their correctional centers. And in 2018-2019, they reduced their number by 8, and it was because of the upgrading process. They are upgrading some of them. So what it means is that by the end of the financial year, they had 235 that were operational, excluding the 8 that they were upgrading in the previous financial year. So for the members to know what are the support services that are offered by the sexual offences courts as the victim is entering into our courts. First, we ensure that we give them information services, and that information is offered by the court preparation officers, so as to inform the victim that on this day your case will be coming in, and I'll be waiting you at a private entrance, so that you are not exposed to the community members. You are not exposed also you don't have sight of the sex offender as you are coming into the system. And then we take them straight to the court preparation services, which is done by the court preparation officer, who is employed by the NPA. The court preparation program is about giving them the information as to who do you expect when you are in the courtroom, what's the role of the presiding officer, what's the role of the attorney, what is cross-examination, and all, what's the role of the prosecutor, and so that when they get to the court space, they are already feeling familiar and comfortable with the environment. And because we have learned that without information, the victims get very terrified, as we also know that we don't want to go to spaces where we do not know where we do not know what to expect. So the court preparation as services it allays the fears of the unknown and breaks open the courtroom to the victims. And built in the court preparation services program is the pre-trial emotional containment service, which is actually making the victim emotionally ready to testify, because we do not want to take a victim who is still traumatized to the court space and to the testifying box. We need to have them emotionally ready to testify. That's quite important. And the pre-trial emotional containment service is also offered to a certain extent where the services are available by the court support, which are officials drawn from the civil society. Then you also have the private waiting services where the victims are kept privately, and we ensure that it is an information space. It's got the information screen so that as they are sitting there, they are still learning about the criminal justice system and what is expected of them. We also give them, obviously, the witness fee. The witness fee, we have extended it to court accompaniment services, which are currently offered by the civil society and the members of the family of the victim. As we know that we have the high number of cases that involve children. So children cannot go to court alone. So they need the court accompaniment services. The same applies to older persons and also some of the persons with disabilities. And you find that some of the traumatized adult victims still cannot come to court alone. So then as the court, we recognize the court accompaniment services by providing them with witness fees. Witness fees is a package of food allowance and also the traveling allowance. And we ensure that they get the consultation in private by the prosecutor's intermediary services that are offered for children and persons with mental disabilities, and also the private testifying service where they testify outside the physical presence of the accused person. And we also have the NPA then, after conviction, taking the impact statement from the survivor in terms of what sentence would you like to be imposed now that the accused has been convicted, so as to ensure that the voice of the victim is heard throughout the court process. And then you also have them, after they have testified, they receive what we call the post-trial emotional containment. So because we know that during testimony, sometimes they have the flashbacks, it comes back, everything, they become emotional and all of that. So we need them to ensure that they are emotionally ready then to face the world. And if then it does not succeed in that is the post-trial emotional containment service, they are referred to DSD then for trauma debriefing and counseling. And they're also referred to other support services. So basically this is the basket of support services that the victim receives when they come into the sexual offenses court. And they are meant to read the system of what we call the secondary victimization. And in the next picture you will see them. This is the innovation that we have brought into the model. The magistrate is sitting at the bench, and the victim is testifying in the private testifying room. There's a small monitor which gives the magistrate a very close view so as to see, you know, whether the victim is tired, is emotionally challenged, so that the case can adjourn so as to give the victim time, or maybe postpone to some. But this is one thing of ensuring that as they are there, they are able to see the demeanor of the victim as the victim testifies. And also we have the private testifying room, as I have mentioned, where the victim then testified outside the physical presence of the accused so as to alleviate fear and also the emotional stress that they go through when they testify. So when they are here, they don't even see what is happening in the courtroom. They don't have that. So it's like testifying in one of the rooms and not having the physical contact of everyone who is in the courtroom. And we also provide then the waiting area, as you are seeing, for children. And we also have a space for the court accompaniment services, as you see that the parents have got space there to take care of their children when the children are in the private waiting area. And then the adult waiting area, those are the facilities that we provide so as to ensure that we bring down the levels of emotional stress and make them our victims ready to testify. And also, now the performance of the sexual offences course is one thing that we are looking at how do we improve. But as you see in this slide, that the FCS, which stands for Family Violence Child Protection and Sexual Offences Units, there are 105 in the country established specialized units established by SAPS. So with all the cases that have gone through these specialized units, they were able in the previous financial year to have 692 life sentences imposed on their cases. But this excludes some of the cases that were channeled in our 409 regional courts in the country. We have 409 regional courts in the country, and during this reporting time, 89 of those were the sexual offences courts. So, but the 105 FCS units were able to get 692 life sentences in the cases that they managed. And now coming to the 55 Tutuzela case centers, in all the sexual offenses that were managed by the Tutuzela case centers, they managed to get a 348 life sentences. What it means is that our courts are quite serious about sexual violence, and they are imposing harsh sentences in sexual offenses cases, and that is then a performance that is a good performance of our courts in cases of sexual in the management of the cases of sexual offences. But we cannot report as government and exclude at the civil society. Civil society is working hand in hand with government. They provide psychosocial services for the victims of sexual violence. They also provide the shelter services and also provide the court accompaniment services I have mentioned. And also in the court space, they also provide the court support services. That's where then they are providing the pre-trial and the post-trial emotional containment services to the victim. They also provide legal services. They are also there in advocacy. So we work together. We have structures where we deliberate and plan with the civil society. So we recognize their support services as well. Now, the next question is, does government have enough resources to curb sexual crimes in our country? Now, Chairperson, as you will see in the next slide, it speaks to the gaps that we have in the human capital. at every service point. That's a sad situation because of the economic a decline of the country that has impacted then in the resources that government has. For instance, with the court intermediary services, as I have mentioned, that these are the support services that are provided for children and persons with mental disabilities when they testify in our court. We have lost 31. We have a vacancy rate of 31. So meaning that at the end of 2017-18, we had 184. And we were supposed to have 185. So in 2017-28, we had one vacancy. Now moving to 2018-2019, we had a vacancy of 31 intermediary posts. And now coming to the ASD. The ASD is the assistant director intermediaries which are giving supervision to the court intermediary services. There are nine, so meaning that one is leading one province. So we had four at the end of this performance cycle time, and so we lost five. So there's a high staff turnover in government, which is then impacting not in the right way in terms of support, in the provision of support services for the victims. Then the court preparation officers, as we have seen there with the NPA, has reported that they have a vacancy of 34 court preparation officers. And then the FCS, there will be, before the end of this financial year, they have reported that there will be employing 500 FCS officials to bring up their capacity to 2,742. And then you also have the forensic social workers that are working together with the FCS officials, and they have not mentioned then their vacancy rate then. And then you also have then the correctional services. Correctional services, they are functioning with a capacity of less 2,438 correctional officials at their correctional centers. It's quite a huge, and with the prosecutors as well. I think prosecutors is only just that I did not get their numbers, but I believe that it is almost 1,000 of the prosecutors that are not in our courts. When they are here, they will be able to respond to that. So what it means is that at the service points where people, survivors, need support, we are, as government, providing services with lean staff capacity, and which is quite a huge problem. And then you come then to the skills development, because when the victim of sexual offenses comes to our court, as I have said, they have emotional needs, they have special needs, and those special needs will need a specialized skills, a chaperson, so as to be addressed, and the specialized skills would require then for the stakeholders to have skills development programs, and also to have then the specialist that will be offering those services at the service points. And also, the Act also provides then, that is in Section 66, it says that the NPA must report annually and must put together the training courses that also have that also deal with the emotional challenges of the victims, and the same applies with SAPS and also the Department of Health. So then their reports are part of what we have. They have a chapter here that speaks to the performance in terms of Section 66 of the Act. So in 2018, you will see that there has been a decline in the number of the officials that have been trained, and it is because of the budget cuts that every stakeholder has experienced. So with us, with our court clerks, we only managed to train 37 and together. And then for trauma debriefing, we also provided trauma debriefing because we don't want our people to experience vicarious trauma as they are providing services. And it is something that every stakeholder is required to do to ensure that you take your people to trauma debriefing, because it gets frustrating when you are hearing traumatizing experiences of the victim day by day. So you also have then, we have also trained 451 data capturers to capture information on the National Register for Sex Offenders. And as you see that the NPA has also trained their people on court preparation, 120, and there is a decline there. It's also because of the budget cuts. And then you also have the prosecutors being trained on sexual offenses, trafficking in persons, using their training program, which is specialized, they train 74, which is also a decline. And also then, but then we see then with their integrated skills course, which then speaks to all the critical stakeholders in sexual offences, and that are also providing services at the TCCs. They trained 865 in this financial year, which is quite a huge jump. And then with SAPS, we saw SAPS also. SAPS train those who are at the service point, that is at the charge office. They are taking them through what they call the first responder course, and they are also taking through their investigators, and they have a program that is called the sexual offenses course for investigators. And then, which is the one that is at the higher level, which is then for the FCS specialists, then they do, they have another course that they give them. So they trained a total of 2,204. We tried as government to provide skills development, but as I have said, that it was with a dwindling budget. And DSD also trained, DSD provides, they have developed an induction manual for the social workers, so they train them in this financial year, and also they also provide a training for safety and risk assessment, therapeutic program for children and families affected by sexual offences, especially when they have experienced sexual violence, and also after they have testified in the court. Then we send them to DSD so that they are taken through that program, the entire family. So they had a performance of 265 in this financial year. DBE, as I have indicated, that the Act does not require them to report, but because of the challenges that they're experiencing at their schools, so they have taken a decision to report before this committee. So they have a number of programs that they have there, which are for the educators and some for the learners, including they did in this financial year, they developed the protocols on reporting and management of sexual abuse and harassment. So they trained their educators on that. They also trained their educators on sexuality and reproductive health. It's a course as to how they develop their learning programs for the educators. And they did that so that they introduced this learning program in this financial year, that is the 2019-2020. So they trained 21,362 educators. And then you also have Legal Aid. Legal Aid has got a brilliant learning program, which is an e-training course, where then everyone who is their member must go through that training course, and it is subjected to performance management as well. So they also trained them and also did the trauma debriefing, as you are seeing on that slide. And the correctional services, they trained their correctional officers on how to prevent sexual offences within their correctional centres. They did that, and it's also one of the brilliant learning programs that they have introduced. And they also now train, which is something they provide now, the trauma awareness to their correctional officials when they are dealing with the incidents of sexual offences, because we know that the inmates are also the victims of sexual violence. So they are also reporting on those. Then they had a better performance of 603, as you see on the slide. And we also have then the DOH. DOH has introduced a management of sexual offences of sexual offences survivors, which they have introduced it for the doctors. And in this reporting time, they improved their course, and then they trained 30. It was because it was an improvement. And then they also trained nurses, 119 of the nurses on that. They also made some changing also in J88 on how do you complete J88. J88 is the medical report. So they did that working with justice and other stakeholders, police, and all of that. So it was a new program that they introduced in 2018-2019. Now, coming to public education, as we know that we cannot have prevention without public education. We need to prevent sexual violence, not only when it comes to our courts, but it must be prevented at individual level, Chairperson. It must be prevented at family level, prevented also at community level, and also prevented at societal level. So now we are in the process, Chairperson, of introducing community participation. And it is something that the Department of Justice started last Saturday. Last Saturday we met with at Soweto. We were there with in Dobsonville with the fathers, where we go straight. We are not taking people now in the community halls. We engage with a family and ask that family in a particular community if they can allow us to come in. And we meet in the space of that community, and the one that we had, it was in the yard of a family. And where then we invited the couples to come in, and to come in with their children to talk about GBVF at community, at family level, where the father was engaging and the mother engaging and the children engaging and asking questions at that level. And after that, then coming as a community to say that, what is it that we need to do to stop GBVF from our community? So what it means is that we are then trying then to engage the community as well and say that, please help us as government, as how do we stop this? Because the police are not in the bedroom and the cops are not in the bedroom, and that is where then sexual violence usually occurs. So that's the new innovation that we're introducing. So this is the performance, as you will see, that it is in terms of radio talk shows, community dialogues, schools education, and all of that, and NPA having done also the moot courts and the community campaigns, and DSD also done, and they have what is called the YOLO, which is called You Only Live Once campaign, and also the Siyalulama campaign, and it's all about bringing the communities in the discourse and also in the intervention program.
Sorry, I assume you're busy running off now.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
So you also then, so these are all the performances that you would see that they have done, and then also DBE came with the Jomri for Future Choices for Children, and Legal Aid as well goes out and talks to community, because public education needs to be mainstreamed. There is no stakeholder that should not be involved in that. As we have seen there, the traditional leaders also participated in public education on gender inequalities, sexual violence, in the initiation practices, harmful practices that lead to sexual violence. Everyone has participated in public education. So, but we would like to do more, Chairperson, is only because of that we are experiencing the budget cuts, as I have mentioned. Now, coming to the National Register for Sex Offenders, this is the register. Chapter 6 of the legislation requires the Minister of Justice to establish the National Register for Sex Offenders. And this is the register then that is recording the particulars of the sex offenders convicted of sexual offenses against children and mentally disabled persons. So as you will see then, that it is, you might have heard the president talking about expanding the scope of the NRSO and the department also responding in certain platforms. So we are in a process now of amending a Chapter 6 so as to ensure that it is not only recording the convictions of sexual offenses against children and persons with mental disabilities, but also to cover other survivors as well. It is also a response from the civil society to say that the register should have a broader protection. So in the previous financial year, we experienced, Chairperson, a number of challenges in our data collection in terms of the NRSO. That then led the department to say, whoa, let us stop now and do the overhaul of the register. We started a project that is called the Data Verification Project, where we were then looking at each and every entry that has been entered in the register. So we verified 32,570 entries, and from those entries, the 24,912 were validated as the entries that should be in the register. And because of that, then, it meant then that we have a clean register that would then permit the department to issue the clearance certificate. Because there's a provision in Chapter 6 of the Act that says that the NRSO must provide the certificates to people who are at service points that expose them, that give them the direct access to children and mental disabled persons. So we started to do this in November, and in the month of November only, we have already issued 3,176 clearance certificates, and we're still moving on because November has just is not yet come to an end. Now, coming to the legal developments, as the sexual offences legislation is one of the pieces of legislation that have been tested a lot in our court, and you will see it then that we have had a number of developments. So as you know, that the traditional courts bill, it also talks to the rights of women, and we cannot talk about the rights of women and exclude the sexual violence. So that one, it is a bill that is pending before the select committee, as the members would know. And then we have the cyber crimes bill. It is also pending before the select committee, and it also deals with the issues, as we know that the cyberspace, that's where you find the pornography and other crimes that are perpetrated against children and women that have the sexual connotations. So it's a relevant piece of legislation that will come in, is before the select committee. And we also have the prevention and combating of hate crimes and hate speech bill. Yes. And then we also have then the pieces of legislation that we are in a process of developing, which is the National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. And this, it is in terms of Article Article 4 of the declaration, of the summit, of the presidential summit declaration. So the department is responding to the declaration already. And then we also have the one that I've already spoken about of extending the scope of the protection of the National Register for Sex Offenders. We are also responding then to the outcry of the public in terms of the bail law. So we are in a process now of looking into how we can provide more stringent measures and consideration in certain cases that are related to gender-based violence and femicide. So also with the issues of sentencing, as we have heard the President saying that we should be doing so, so we are also looking at that. There's a bill that will be presented before this committee that will be speaking to how do we to strengthen the legislation. So these are the bills. This is work that will be coming to the members, and we'll be asking then the members to help us then that we produce
okay.
and everything. So now which is the light?
I'm going to cut you.
All right. It's a slight.
If you can just 1 minute,
okay.
Because we
All
want
right.
members to engage with us.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, Chairperson. Now, the last slide is the last slide. As I've mentioned, we have limitations as government, the high staff turnover, service points which are under-resourced, the Tutuzela care centers, and we need then to strengthen the coordination at the frontline level. We need to ensure that there's equitable services across the criminal justice system so that all victims are able to get these support services irrespective of where they are. And we are also looking at the delayed legislation of victim support services, but that one I think that is something that the Department of Social Development is looking at, and also the delayed systems integration for crime victim solution, so as to ensure that as a country we have the disaggregated data with unique identifier of the victim. It's something that as government we are looking at, but we are just saying that there have been certain challenges, but we are moving speedily to ensure that we have that system. And also the uneven quality of reporting. It's something that we cannot hide. When you are looking at our reports, you will see that they are not looking the same. It's something that we are looking at. So we have put together as a department the regulations to ensure that there is even quality in reporting. And this will be coming to the members as well. And also the issue of the misalignment of indicators and statistics that SAPS is collecting using these indicators, NPA, these indicators, judiciary, these indicators, DSC, these indicators. So it's something that we're looking at as a government, so as to ensure that we agree on figures, we are reporting on figures that are the same throughout the country. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Edward Kambule, for that very comprehensive report. We know it's time to give resemblance of what is in the 250-page formal reporting that we just received. Colleague members, there's a number of areas that have been covered, as we have heard now, from performance to SOX, blueprint compliant, whether it's fully effective, we will have to hear a bit more, public education infrastructure offerings, the NRSO, how to access that certification, will hear but more, legal bills, as well as the National Council that flows from the National Summit. What we're going to do is perhaps to take, because these are interrelated, it's basically following the action itself, the presentation of men which was done. I just quickly brought to the report, follows through. Whether you want to zoom into with statistical analysis in terms of performance, that's one area. Second area is, of course, the offerings in terms of infrastructure. And the third area is relating to specific public education. The bills, I think, we are quite familiar with. We're not going to move in there unless you want further explanation of that. Let me open for the first round to that effect. That is to engage the report, take into cognizance our earlier point that Honorable Roma Dachen pointed out, that not having had the opportunity to to study the report in detail, and so you are free to ask. We have hands. We have Honorable Horn, Honorable Breitenbach, Honorable Madrachan, Honorable Janki, Honorable Jelly. In that order, can we then proceed?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Acting Chair. Firstly, a question not strictly related to today's presentation. Yesterday, there was an multiple committee meeting, and in the report to be tabled there, it was specifically mentioned that there was an issue with the intersectoral directors' general committee meetings, which basically boiled down to directors general not frequently attending those meetings. So if we could get some further detail in respect of whether that is in fact a real problem, and maybe some detail as to how many meetings this committee have had and recently, and what the attendance is there. Then a few other questions.
Just to get clarity on that question, are you referring to the formal structure that's been formed in terms of the Act, not the one that the Council?
Yeah, the formal structure.
Yeah, all right.
Then, Chair, coming to firstly sexual offences courts, we're all well aware that there's now 89 currently in use, and a further rollout being planned. So can we get from the department what details as to what criteria are being used to determine where these courts are to be established? Is it based on police stations that report high numbers of complaints? Is it based on population figures? That's firstly the one question. Then we all know that new regulations will come into operation early next year. Whether the department can appraise us as to what plans they have or hopefully already in place to ensure compliance with the new regulations in respect of the existing courts. And then there's the historical division between the so-called dedicated sexual offences courts and the hybrid models. So it would be good to have some detail as to, of the 89, how many are dedicated sexual offences courts and how many are still hybrid courts. Then in terms of the court intermediaries, they're on page 4 of I think, our fifth pack. A vacancy number of 31 is declared based on a comparison between the 17-18 financial year and 18-19 financial year. But it's not quite clear to me whether, for example, the 184 that intermediaries that were functional in 17-18 was based on a zero vacancy rate in that year. So we talk of a 31 less intermediaries, but it's not quite clear of whether the whole staff component was in place in 17-18. So that's the one issue. And then secondly, there was a further rollout of sexual offences courts between 17-18 and 18-19. So what happened to making provision in the organogram for intermediaries at those courts? And in addition to that, there is no mention in the report in respect of supervision or management of the intermediaries. So it would be good for us to also hear what is the for example, the ratio. Hopefully there is supervisors or managers in place for court intermediaries. But what's the ratio? How many courts, for example, then falls under a supervisor or manager? So that we can get a sense of how effective management then would be of these intermediaries. Then in terms of the emergency response plan of the President, there's been made mention now here of the review of legislation. We also know that historically, or even prior to that announcement, there was said that there was a 10-year implementation review of the Domestic Violence Act. But it would be good for us to hear now what specific plans are in place. I see one of the issues in terms of the emergency response plan is for Parliament to finalise as soon as possible all relevant legislation. But I think we must also be concerned as to an assessment of the effectiveness of current legislation and how that must be amended. Two last questions, Mr. Chair. In terms of the information on the top 10 courts, to an extent I think the information there raises more questions than it gives answers. I mean, in the presentation, for example, it was identified now that the Free State is now one of the top four provinces, and being a Free Stater, I mean, that's sad information to hear. But I think what is of bigger importance is whether the department looks into what informs this, what leads to this. I mean, if you do a quick calculation, the Free State is less than 5% of the population, but all of a sudden nearly 13% of all sexual offences cases comes from there. So is it now that people are more readily prepared to go and report? So is the police and the whole system more sympathetic so that people are not afraid to go and report, or is it all of a sudden a behavioural problem? We want to know whether the department looks into these factors. And then secondly, once also in respect of the so-called top 10 courts, we were informed by our committee researchers, which once again did a good job, that there's a UCT study of 2016 which indicated that but on average, about 65% of cases are finalized by either being struck from the roll or withdrawn. But just if you do obviously not a very scientific calculation, comparing the new cases versus high withdrawal, there's specific courts where you get a calculation of about 90% of cases which is being withdrawn. So I want to know whether the department also zooms into that when they look at the effectiveness of these courts. And then lastly, I want to deal with the National Sex Offender Register. It would also be good to hear maybe from the Deputy Minister, because he previously indicated that he is aware of all of the reservations out there, the problems, and even though there's today an indication that yes, we're going to relook at the National Sex Offender Register to include all offenders. I think that the issue still remains that how can we place reliance on this data verification project? How can we be sure that there's a clean register? Has there been an outside audit as well? Because the lingering issues regarding this offender register in its current format still remains. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Horn. I hope you didn't ask all the questions from the members. Honourable Breitenbach.
Thank you. It is apparent from your presentation that not all reported cases go to court. And you say this is because some are undetectable, and I'd like to know what that is. What is an undetectable case? What makes a case be labelled undetectable? And how many cases are labelled undetectable? Some are not taken to court because of decisions not to prosecute. What would typical reasons for that be? You say also that some are because witnesses disappear or complainants lose interest. What does this mean exactly? How do witnesses disappear? Where do they disappear to? Why can't they be traced? And why on earth would a complainant lose interest? what would give rise to that situation? Then, according to the information provided, there's a caseload that was carried over of 10,001 cases. Why such a high figure? How old are these cases, these 10,001 cases, from which years do they date? Plus 7,615 new cases. How are these matters going to be disposed of if they're growing at the rate of almost the carried over cases? How are we going to finalise these matters? Also, information provided says 8,395 cases were disposed of. What does that mean? How many of these are old cases? How many of them are backlog cases? And how many cases are withdrawn and why are they withdrawn? The National Prosecuting Authority says their backlog roll for 2018-2019 is 53,731. How many of these are for sexual offences? You say that you have only 12 CCTV systems. What is the difficulty with sorting out this very basic necessity? The National Register for Sexual Offences has many challenges. What are the major existing challenges? How are you suggesting to address them, bearing in mind that in September this year, President Ramaphosa committed to expand the list to all men convicted of acts of violence against women and children? How are you going to deal with this? If we're not managing the register as it is, how are we going to deal with this extra amount? Does the National Prosecuting Authority use alternative dispute resolution in sexual offences cases? And if so, on what basis? And you then mentioned, I'm skipping some questions over, I'm sure other people will ask them. You said police have 1,071 victim-friendly rooms. Where are they located? In which areas? Which police stations? And do the police have sufficient trained personnel to deal with the use of these rooms? And then just finally, where is the National Prosecuting Authority proposing to get sufficient prosecutors, trained prosecutors, sufficient experienced and trained prosecutors to prosecute in these special courts, bearing in mind that there's a huge vacancy rate, particularly with specialised prosecutors? What is the plan there? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Walmart.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like you to be patient with me because I just need to go through each and every page. And also the numbers shown on the screen and the numbers on our papers are different. So I can't go back by numbers. So I'm going to look at the topics of the slides a bit. I beg your indulgence, please. The victim support services. Under there, I would like to know, you give information services to the victim only when the abuse already happened. Okay, so you provide them with information, but I would like to know what preventative measures are given, maybe in schools by who is covered by basic education, so the prevention measures. So I see that the victim only gets support and information on what to do when it has already happened, when the crime has already happened, but there's nothing preventative, no preventative information that's provided. So I would like to see that. I see the various statistics that you have, but the statistics from the Department of Health I don't see. Now, the reason why I'm asking about this is that sometimes the rape or sexual offences, that victim goes to the hospital, but the
person doesn't go and lay a charge, they decide to rather keep quiet or they're too traumatized to report it. So I feel those statistics are also very important, and the Department of Health needs to give that. So does that happen or not? And then relating to education. Now, from what I've seen, education is given to the victim, the victim, the victim, and the family of the victim. But the perpetrator who is in prison or when they have been sentenced, is education given to them? Yes, the Department of Correctional Services told us about the rehabilitation processes, etc. But is there rehabilitation specifically for the offenders of sexual violence and sexual crime? And just to add to what my colleagues already said in relation to the name disposed, does that equal withdrawal? Is it the same? Because if you say the new cases that you get and then you look at the final column, the final total, disposed or withdrawn, I'm not really sure. Does disposed mean that the perpetrator was sentenced? Or does it mean that the person withdrew and did not go through the process? So I'm still a bit confused on the difference and whether there is a difference. I'm going to give an overall question, because I see it all over the presentation. The mentally disabled support would like to know what the background behind that is, why it is only focused on mentally disabled and not, for example, deaf children. Because deaf children sometimes cannot express themselves, or the sign language interpreters aren't present, or they don't understand the adult sign language interpreter because the adult signing and the child signing is different. So what support is provided to deaf children? And I'm also asking this question because the judge or the magistrate does not allow DEFSA to bring their social workers or their social auxiliary workers to provide the relay interpreting when the child or a deaf adult who has been raped doesn't understand the interpreter provided by the court. So we've been pleading with the court to allow an assistance. I see you have these assistance programs, like someone who accompanies the witness, etc., but the court doesn't want a person who can sign to assist the victim. So now I would like to understand what the background is with regard to only the mention of mentally disabled people, but there's no other disability groups like blind or deaf people. If a blind person is raped, what kind of support, a blind child, what kind of support is provided to them? Then the slide says government structures on sexual offences. Now, then it says the JCPS ministers and then the Director General, and then they split into two. So the JCPS Development Committee, as you explained where it's coming from, it's a national, provincial, local, etc., as you said, and then the Technical Intersectoral Committee, you said civil society is involved there. But I would like to know, is there a link between those two groups, because there's no arrow linking them. So maybe the government departments, national, provincial, local, but there's no civil society there. Is civil society only in the technical intersectoral? So how do they understand what is going on in the respective groups on the ground so that everyone has the same understanding? So I'm just wondering why there's no link between these two groups. And then another question from my colleagues, the victim-friendly rooms, who is there? Because the police, the person, are they also a qualified social worker? Is it also, or is it a volunteer that works there? So who works there? Is it a trained person? Is it a person with a qualification? Or also a survivor of sexual abuse? Who is the person who is placed in those rooms? Jay, maybe I'll stop. If I lost my other questions, I'll go. Oh, sorry. The public education. I'm talking about public education. To who? Who gives it? And you said, you know, about the community within the community, but who does the education in terms of that? Thank you, Jay.
Thank you. We have next, I think, Honorable Jelly. Sorry, Honorable Janki, and then Jelly.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe at the start, because I cannot make this point, so it is corrected in the next time. We certainly interacting for the first time with them that it's just not proper. We started after 10. It was the longest presentation that we had to receive from any department, and you ended about 5 to 12. I felt that was too long. Otherwise, you're reducing the session as an information session and less of an engaging session. But I understand that when we did not have the documents. So in a way, we had to be workshopped. So I thought I must raise that too. So in future, we don't do that because we certainly are very finicky when it comes to those things. The first point, Chair, that I want to raise, and it's a general point I want to throw. Unfortunately, I'm throwing to you because no one else is presenting. So I have a sense that if this is an annual report, and this is what I want to test with you, I'm sure you came here, but that's a sense I have after you presented that we are not winning this war. That your report, and I'll give some examples, it's very clear that you're not presenting a report where you are able to say we're doing a lot of work and we're succeeding. We don't seem to be succeeding. That's the sense I have. There's about 6 pieces of legislation that have been put together. It's clear that we don't need more legislation to solve the problem. Something else is needed. Because you can put every legislation that you want, it doesn't seem that way. And we've got so many structures. So you've got legislation and lots of structures, and yet we're not making headways. So what is this that is missing? Listening to this annual report. If I were to take you to that slide that was there, I don't know, it's off now, just as an example to demonstrate the sexual offences cases, the top 10 courts in 2018-2019. So Valcom, and in fact one of the things that I would request that it be done so that we clean the language, is dispose meaning withdrawal. Because from one sitting, disposing might mean something else. I thought that when you say that, I thought, okay, these are finalized cases. It's closed. Later on, I found out, oh, dispose means withdrawal. So that we have a consistency of that kind of a language in what we do. But if you go to that slide, Valcom Social Offences Court, Valcom SOC, the new cases is 233. These are the new cases. Cases withdrawn is 155. The last column, which is the most important for me, is your outstanding, as at that, which is 285. But if you put that together, the new cases as well as the withdrawals, and you subtract that from the, because that gives me 388, and I subtract it from the outstanding, the actual work you've done is 103 cases. Forget about the 233 and all of that. This is what you've done, the network that you've done. Again, I'm elaborating on my point that I'm not seeing headways, success in terms of what you do. And if I were to take power being in the Western Cape, the Social Offences Court, where 116 were new cases and your withdrawal were 88, outstanding is 237. In fact, that one is even worse because when you put those two together at 168 and subtract it from 37, you have a minus. So you can't say you have achieved anything in relation to that. I'm now just speaking about the numbers and problematizing those numbers in terms of what you're bringing to us. So that's one issue I want to raise. Secondly, Chair, I don't know why, so, because you also have got an incomplete incomplete information on a number of areas. One is, for example, under the NPA, the prosecutors. You're not able to give us numbers. So are you saying this is your annual report where the NPA could not provide because you did say that by the time you came here, you did not get anything from the NPA. The NPA is here. So why is it so? Because there's important work to complete a report. And here the stakeholder, and the fortunate part with NPA is not one of those that are optional. It is designated to be part of this, and yet you're not able to get what is so. So I need some clarity on that one, Chair. The third point is that I think the colleagues have raised this point. Would you just elaborate to us why this high number of withdrawals? I think Honorable Breitenbach started to raise that. What does this mean? Are the withdrawals based on intimidation of witnesses, of victims, or are withdrawals based on incompetence in terms of our work, this kind of slow pace? What is the driving force for these withdrawals? Because they seem to be a sore thumb. They stand out in the kind of work that you're doing. And then there's an issue about the publishing. Perhaps just to help me follow you, when are these sex offenders register published? You also have got 7,658 entries that have been discarded. What does that mean? What was the cause of that? Am I reading the situation correct? And perhaps my last point, Chair, which is a general point, is in everything else, listening to this report, it seems that everything else is increasing. It's not decreasing. The only thing that is decreasing in this report is correctional services. There are 8 centers that have been reduced. But everything else is up in the sky. So, that's why I made the conclusion, because from where we're sitting, that should tell us that we are not making headways. Because it's not a beautiful picture that we have got all of these numbers going up. Because it shows you, it makes a statement that we're losing the war. And yesterday we had a meeting of the integrated team, different portfolio committees. I think she was part of that. That was unfortunately postponed and collapsed without us having proper presentations. But I went there with my hawk's eye firmly on the justice sector issues. And it became clear if we started that, I would have raised the issues. There it's very clear that the quality of some of these indicators are not helpful if you do things from the perspective of the victim. So one indicator speaks about how many courts, regional courts, will be established. And my view is that's you can do as much as you can that. The issue is the functionality of those courts, not how many courts have been established. And as long as we're not able to do, and this is what you get in government generally, because when it comes to indicators, all they do is the numbers, is quantifying the numbers. But from a victim point of view, who is in Khayelitsha, who even if in your report you say Khayelitsha is a new original court, who goes there, never get assistance. That court in my watch is not working. I don't care whether it is established or it is not established. That court is not working. So there's an important thing about the quality of these indicators. We've got to get to a point where even the legislation, it's not enough to just list, there's going to be 5 legislative pieces that are going to be introduced. I'm interested in terms of what those are in relation to assisting the victim. So, Chair, I thought I must just make those points and it's good that we're having this, and I think it's what you're doing is a very important work. I am not sure whether all of these stakeholders take this work seriously as it is serious. This the work you're doing has gone beyond being a departmental work. This is a presidential project that we're talking about here. And exactly, I mean, Parliament in September was addressed by the President on all of these issues. And I think there's a space that we're going to watch. I just don't, I'm sure you can make that point, that in terms of the presidential summit and all the recent issues, but I'm now interested in the annual performance plan as to how it is informed by all of these things kind of going forward. The annual report is looking back. We can forget about that. But what is it that we're going to have to do kind of going forward? And that, for me, is what I'm interested in. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Janki. Honourable.
Thank you, Chairperson. Most of my colleagues have covered me, but there are quite a number of those that I still want to emphasize and get more information. I just want, before I continue with my questions, Chairperson, I just want to find out, here we have our department leading this project or this program. From our side, our justice, in fact, from Justice Department, we've got Advocate Praise Kambula. Is it the presenter?
Yeah.
You will answer.
Yes.
Okay. And then from the NPA, we have got Acting Head Advocate P. Smith.
Yeah.
Is he around? Who do we have from the NPA? Okay. Okay, thank you. I have a reason, Chairperson, why I'm asking this, because if we have to deal, talk with people who are responsible for this, taking from what Honorable Danji said, this is a serious matter. And I was going to say, if it was, you know, for me, that we really even don't want to see people acting in these positions. We would request that it should be people that are dedicated on this and people who are doing it every day, Deputy Minister, if it's possible. But you will tell us maybe what are the challenges around it, considering the seriousness of this matter. I just want also to emphasize or come back to the issue of the meeting. I know that it was only our sister there who was present in that meeting yesterday. I want to start from that meeting of yesterday. That meeting was very important. And from the presentation, in fact, I'm going to differ from my colleague, my Honorable Janji, in terms of saying the presentation was long. For me, I'm happy that it was long. I'm happy that you gave us that information, because that's what we needed. And we wanted the depth of this so that we can be able to locate exactly where is the problem and be able to oversight and help you if need be. So, yes, it's unusual to have such a long a without, you know, talking bad or negating on what my colleague said, but for me it was good, Chairperson. So, going forward, Chairperson, from the presentation, we have departments. If I'm wrong, you'll tell me when you respond. We are the leading department in this. That's what I got from the presentation. We lead this. And all these other departments, the social development, the legal aid falls under us, and health and all that. All those departments, we are the ones who are coordinating those departments. You will tell me if I'm wrong. And if I'm correct, it means, Chairperson, the meeting that was convened yesterday by joint committees, it's a joint committee meeting that we held yesterday, it means, I'm not sure if I'm going to, you'll tell me, if I'm going to, I'm going to say we are responsible for the collapsing of that meeting. You'll correct me. It's just that I'm taking it from what happened yesterday. Because yesterday we were expecting a report or reports. I was going to say we were expecting a report, a consolidated report, where, like this report that we're having today, because this report is giving us the report of even other stakeholders that are that are part of this. So that meeting of yesterday, because when I engaged the chairperson after, I said, Chairperson, how is it that we are going to have all these departments or that maybe we were expecting to present yesterday, because it was a joint meeting, where we are going to have, you know, those particles or parts of the report. How come we are going to have presentations from everybody? Because I don't know, I didn't know that we are leading here. So, but in short, this department is supposed to engage the department, the women ministry, because this is the custodian, the project of women.
Let me just point out on that issue, maybe early on,
yesterday's presentation was to be received from the interim council led by all of these component departments report as a seat on the interim council. So just this one.
Can you come there, because they're all going to confuse me. So that is why I said, if I am wrong, you will correct the whole information. But I said I'm glad that it was wrong, and I'm happy that today we are going to get the clarity of exactly who's supposed to do what. Because for as long as we don't get a clarity on these issues, we won't be able to move. Because we want to make sure that at the end, we nip that person who is not doing his job. So we'll just keep on accusing people, accusing this one. We want to know where is this issue, and so that you can deal with it every day. So let me pass from that one, Chairperson. So I'm for now, you will give me, at least I gave you the smaller Yana, my little knowledge in terms of what happened yesterday. So you can come back and assist also the Deputy Minister in terms of the stakeholders. I also have another question. It was reported, my colleague, the Honorable Horn, also mentioned the issue of the challenges in terms of these meetings, sitting, people not attending. We just want to know, is it the truth? Is it true that we have challenges of people not taking this serious? Like I already said, that we want to know exactly who is the culprit here, so that we deal with exactly the culprit. Because it seems that the DGs and the heads are supposed to be in charge of this. So can we get a clarity on that one? And then let me go to the presentation. In this presentation, the slide where you were talking about the crime statistics, you have mentioned that there is that, is it a gap or disjuncture between subs and us, where when information has to come to court, those ones will have four charges, and then the one will have, you will have only one charge.
can we? I heard that you say you said through your chairperson, you are looking at ways as to how to sanitize that. So can I get at least a little bit of how are you going to go about doing that? Because it seems that it indeed is a problem. So can I get more information on that one? And then also on the structure, on this governance structure. On this one, I hear that the minister is the one who is in charge, who's supposed to report to Parliament. It goes back to the first question, Chair, to you. That is it the minister who's supposed to come and brief these other stakeholders or what? So that's where I also got confused in terms of it is the minister, the director general, those structures that as they go. I got confused because my interest is at the point where do you link with women ministry and many women directorate? Because it's the reason why we are having problems up to this 25 years, we feel like we are not penetrating and getting into the real issues. I think it's this issue of silos. So we want to make sure that this must have, this one is doing his own thing at the corner and then we don't talk to each other. So that's where I want to see exactly where is the how can we sanitize our work. Also on page 8 of the presentation, the victim friendly rooms. I think that one is directed to SAPS. I want to know the effectiveness of this. Is it really happening in the way that it is really helping our victims? Because I think that's the area where it is an entry point where we get this information, and if it is not handled with care, we really have problems. There are a lot of problems in actual fact. I don't want to get into details. There are so many reported problems when it comes to the issue of reporting insults at that point. So if you can also brief us, give us more information. Is it this thing of welcoming our victims really working? The Tituzelas, I think there was a question in terms of that. But also there is still a question, Deputy Minister, when it comes to the issues of the resourcing of this. Of this center. It's very important. These are important service points that we would like to see them really, really functioning optimally. And then also this one of the health facilities, in terms of health. I know this one, maybe it does not fall under us. But also it brings me to the issue of saying we have our own internal stakeholders and we have our own stakeholders that have been identified by the declaration and all that. So before we can even master what we have, how come that we extend ourselves in a manner that we bring others? I know that's also important, but isn't that important that we have to master what we have at hand first and make sure that we are sure about what we have and that we are really implementing and as mandated or as required before we can even go outside? Because we need those stakeholders, if you are correct, but can we master what we have? Just comment on that one. On this one of the health, I think, Chairperson, this one also, I'm not sure if how possible it is that maybe we also have an opportunity to engage with the Gender Health and Justice Research Unit at some point, if it's possible, Chairperson, so that we are able to get into these issues because they impact on what is expected of what we are talking about. I also liked the presentation on page 9, where you outline exactly the victim support that we have as a department. But also just comment in terms of the when this information comes in, the court preparation, the time space, the time spent on that one. For the victim being prepared for the call, how long do you have a time frame so that we don't delay because the victims, they normally complain about these cases that are taking long, and you find that the case was reported when the child was, for example, a child was 6 years and the child now is 13 years and is still subjected into such processes. So how long? In fact, if you can also mention on the issue of the pre-trial also. How long is it expected? So how long are we expected that the case must finish? If I report a case today, when am I expected? I know that there are dynamics in between, but at least when can we make at this point, it should have been concluded, the case. Lastly, Chairperson, it is about the, she made a statement, Advocate Kambula made a statement that our courts are serious about sentences. But what we read in the media over the weekend, really, it doesn't qualify what you just said, that the courts are serious. Because did you see those discrepancies in terms of our magistrates giving sentences to these cases? How do you give a suspended case on a rape case? You give a perpetrator suspended sentence, and then you give a rape case, rape offender, you give him 5 years. We don't need that. I think, let me just put it clear here, as a woman, I don't want to find myself in a case, if I happen to be raped, I find myself where a judge or a magistrate will give somebody who raped me and there is a proof that this person raped me and all the witnesses, everybody, it's like we agree that there is a rape which has taken place. And a judge or a magistrate gives this person 5 years. Believe you me, I won't be happy. So can we get also an explanation in terms of your statement vis-a-vis that which we have read over the papers? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. This is a special request or allow you to speak half a minute, Honourable President.
Thank you.
Mike.
Can we have a breakdown of the budget and where the reprocessed funds are going to come from and how this ties into the steering committee in that whole area, please? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Just before you start the responding, just allow me from my side perhaps the clarity on some of the issues. And that is the NRSO. In terms of clearance certificate, how to access that is now interested parties accesses. Can this explain the process or mechanism, how it works?
Yes.
Secondly, on the outreach, the dialogue, I assume that's part of the 16 days of active room of no violence against children, or it's part of the what is called the next 6 month program of the president. At this point, give us a bit more information. Thank you very much, dear.
Yeah, maybe if I can start, I don't know how much time we've got, because there's also people from NPA, Lizelle, and SAPS and so on, and we need to respond. Maybe some of the answers can be done in written form, but maybe there's some of the higher level issues. Just firstly to Honourable Mafeko Jene, the article in the Sunday Times, it's one magistrate, okay, from Umlazi. And so it's one magistrate that has been giving, four of her her sentences were sent on review to the High Court because she was giving low sentences for rapes, particularly of children. When they went on review, they were overturned, sent back for sentencing. That was some months ago, and in a sense, the Sunday Times story was a recycling of that originally happening. It was front page of, I know, the KZN Mercury at the time. It got into the media again because one of the matters, the resentencing, it was Dudule, where the guy got a non-custodial sentence. It went back earlier in the week, last week, for resentencing to another magistrate, and Mr. Dudule got a 20-year sentence. So it's a big problem. It's something with the Magistrates Commission to investigate what exactly was going on. Why were these sentences so lenient? Should there be disciplinary action taken against that magistrate? That magistrate is no longer hearing sexual offences cases, although she is completing her part of sexual offences. I've got that from the Acting Regional Court President. So just to contextualise that, yes, it's a problem, but it did get picked up and it has been corrected.
Then I just sort of wanted to talk about what this process is.
And that is that we have the Sexual Offences Act, or the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Act. In terms of that act, well, that act is the responsibility of the Minister of Justice to administer. In terms of that act, there is this intersectoral committee chaired by the Director General of Justice, and there must be a report, an annual report to Parliament. There is a similar provision in the Child Justice Act relating to child justice, and there's a similar intersectoral committee. So what we are doing here is reporting on the implementation of the Sexual Offences Act specifically. Not sexual offences more broadly, but the implementation of that act. And that would be the crimes, the investigations, going to court, the sentencing. So that's why we don't deal too much with the issue of prevention, because that's not part of this act. And the involvement of the other departments, social development particularly, is regarding the implementation of this act only, not other matters they're doing with regard to gender-based violence. There is then this interim steering committee, which is both, the other thing to say, in terms of the act, there's no civil society involvement. Okay, it is just officials from different departments. Personally, we are coming with legislation for the Department of Women because they will be heading the intersectoral committee. At the moment, the steering committee is chaired by the president's advisor, but in terms of the overlap, Advocate Kambule is the secretary of that committee. Am I right? No, that one, the intersectoral. But what's your role in? But anyway, you sit on the steering committee. She sits on the steering committee, let me put it that way. So there is that overlap. I imagine we will continue with the implementation of the Sexual Offences Act, although personally, I think possibly the evaluation of its operation should maybe go to this steering committee or intersectoral committee, that we need to change the legislation in that regard. But sexual offences are a crisis. I mean, we know that. I mean, that's what the public has been saying. It's a national emergency, not a state of emergency, but it's a national crisis and a national emergency. Globally, but also particularly in South Africa. The causes, Honourable Jankies, I'm not sure. It's interesting with Malcolm Maradeni, which has sort of dropped off a bit, but it's basically former mining towns where you've got high unemployment, you've probably got a lot of alcohol abuse, those kinds of things. But we haven't, in terms of the implementation of this act, looked so much at the causes. Our concern is the investigation, prosecution and conviction and the treatment of survivors of sexual offences. So that's sort of more where we're focused in terms of the act. Obviously the broader issues are a problem. Just one point to raise, it's a pity Honourable Breitenbach has left, but we did have a workshop on the implementation of the Sexual Offences Act at the end of 2017, a big 2-day workshop is involved, all different role players, stakeholders. We can maybe get you the minutes or the report from that meeting. But it was to try and look at where the Sexual Offences Act can be improved, NPA, court services, police, social development, health, and then civil regional court magistrates, and then civil society organisations. But because we got support from the Dutch government for that workshop, one of the people who attended was the Dutch government rapporteur on gender-based violence or sexual offences. And she was actually telling us that the conviction rate, which would be from the rapes happening to the conviction in the Netherlands, was low. I think if I recall correctly, and I speak under correction, it was only about 8 or 9%. Sorry? 8%. 8%. So in the Netherlands, this developed country with lots of resources, 8 out of 100 rapists will get convicted. In South Africa, I think we're at about 5%. I speak under correction, but anyway. But what I'm just trying to say is internationally, there's a problem around convictions for rapes. Obviously, our ideal with the implementation of the Act is to improve the conviction rates. And then just also to point out, and it's difficult in that what Advocate Kambule was saying, if you take Luyanda Buerta, he was sentenced last week to 2 life terms, okay, for 2 rapes. But they were 2 rapes of Uyinene. It just, he raped her twice. So that's why the prosecution went for 2 counts of rape, and he pleaded guilty, so he got 2 life sentences. But it's one person, one victim, one rapist. So that's unfortunately where the statistics, we're measuring different things, so we just have to be careful of that. So the number of life sentences does not necessarily equate equally to the number of rapists who are convicted of life sentences, because some of them may have been convicted for more, or you may have had multiple rapists in one case. Then I just sort of wanted to talk about, with the attendance at the, you'll see on page 15 both to Honourable Horn and Honourable Maseko Jele, that there is a problem. The Intersectoral Committee is meant to meet twice a year. I think, Advocate Kambule, that maybe if members of the committee want, let them see the minutes. But yes, there is a problem of the attendance of senior officials from other departments. But I don't think we've got anything we want to hide on the issue. One of the issues which hasn't come up here, which I have raised quite sharply with Advocate Kambule, is why did that intersectoral committee not pick up the problem of the rape kits at the police stations? Because if it's going to be looking at the implementation of the Act, they should have. And that is a thing, something we've got to look at. I think the other thing I just wanted to touch on was the NRSO. I mean, we've got Ms. Majila, who's the registrar. But let me just say that this provision came from an amendment to the Sexual Offences Act made when the bill was in the Parliamentary Committee. So it didn't come from the department. The provisions basically are, Honourable Jankies in particular, was if you get convicted of a sexual offence against a minor or a person with mental disabilities, then you should have your name put on the register. The people who can then access the register, which is currently in the law, are employers of people who are looking after children or people with mental disabilities only. So, if you are managing a tertiary college women's residence, none of those employees have to be vetted on the sexual offences register because they're looking after adults. That's the problem with the Act. There's also one provision which is that you can get off the register if the police confirm they're not investigating you for any other sexual offence, which has been extremely difficult to get the police to confirm that because it's vague. You know, it's too vague. So what we are looking at with amendments, and would be bringing early next year amendments to the law relating to that, is to say it should be any conviction for a sexual offence. I'll get on to the issue of gender-based violence, any conviction for a sexual offence. And basically, we need to look at who gets access to the register. It's obviously not enough to say it's employers of people looking after children or people with mental disabilities. We need to widen it. The issue the President raised was, should it be made public, which I think Honourable Jankees was hinting on. What we've got to be careful of is that, in South Africa, two people a day get killed in vigilante violence. If you suddenly discover that there's a sexual rapist living next door to you, is it going to cause, if there's a rape in that community, which may not involve that sexual offender, but they may well like it get targeted, the community may assume it's them and may target them. So those are some of the things we've got to look at. We do have a problem of gender-based, the crime of gender-based violence. There isn't one. Okay, we can record sexual offences or offences in terms of the Sexual Offences Act. We can record crimes in terms of the Domestic Violence Act. You then have a whole lot of other crimes. You can have a woman being assaulted by her partner. That will just get recorded as assault or assault GBH. Okay, it won't get recorded in a separate category. So we have asked both the NPA and the police to look at this issue. Isn't there a way of the other crimes? You know, what's also not uncommon is arson. The woman's house will be burnt by her estranged partner. Into the system it will come as arson. So we need to be able to develop the mechanisms to identify those cases as gender-based violence. But I'm just saying, outside sexual offences and Domestic Violence Act crimes, it becomes more difficult to categorise them. But the National Register of Sex Offenders is currently working in terms of the legislation. It's just that legislation is not enough. And that's also, Honourable Horne, where you've got to be careful of Parliament. Does Parliament have the capacity to initiate legislation? Or is it not better that because you can come with a great idea and then discover when it gets put into practice it doesn't work so well. With the legislation, because there's nobody here from legislative development, I think Advocate Kambule did give a report, but we are reviewing the Domestic Violence Act. We are then bringing amendments to the Sex Offences Act. But generally, as Honourable Jainki says, the problem is more the implementation of legislation rather than new legislation. There are areas where we can tighten, but there's no magic switch that we can press to end gender-based violence and sexual offences. The other point I just wanted to make, which will not go down particularly well, I'm sure, but I think I need to make it. We have hit a snag with the regulations for the sexual offences courts. Now, just to explain, these are regulations that set the minimum standards for sexual offences courts. So if you go to a sexual offences court, you will know this is what you can expect. And these regulations were finalised after quite a few meetings with different role players within government that were involved with sexual offences courts, the regional court presidents and civil society, and we came up with regulations that everybody was happy with. In terms of the Act, there has to be concurrence from the Chief Justice, which was given quite recently. The snag we have hit is that the Chief State Law Advisor feels that some of the provisions are ultra vires. So we've got to engage with them, and what we're intending to do is, again, bring all the role players together, but this time with the Chief State Law Advisor, to discuss the matter. It related to things like, it was a contentious issue that a provision that court officials must report when there's a, I'm sorry about minute detail, but when the equipment is not working, that they must report it to the regional court president. The Chief State Law Advisors are saying that is ultra vires. We wanted that. Well, I supported that going in. The regional court presidents wanted it, so they know what is happening, rather than you've got this endless day after day response that the equipment is not being fixed. But State Law Advisors feel that's ultra vires. There were a number of other aspects relating to civil society that similarly. So we have unfortunately hit a snag. Obviously, I'm sure you would agree we need to attend to it. We can't knowingly promulgate, or the minister knowingly can't promulgate regulations that are ultra vires. So that's just one area we've got to tackle. I think those are the issues I wanted to touch on. I think then I'll hand back to Advocate Kambule, and I think the specific answers then would need to come from the specific individuals here from that section. Again, with time, at least the House is only sitting at 3, but we can also supply some written answers if need be.
Yeah, no, thank you. We unfortunately are going to go over our time, members. We also locate to 1:30. Yeah, if we ever, we're all okay, 1:30. Edward Kambur, you can immediately. Honourable Breitenbach, unfortunately, she did apologize. She to leave urgently for something, for call that she had to go take. Thank you.
A lot of questions have already been responded to. We will then, because of the time, request that we submit the written responses to all the questions, if the chairperson would allow us.
But there will be those that you can respond to now. May be quite comfortable. Of course, the remainder you will have to. Yeah, Honourable Jim, you want to?
Thank you. I think to those that you would give us a written response on, I would like to add 2 changes. For example, this a new
one. No.
But just to add to that, when we bring the
bill. We will do at the end of the meeting before we close. I just want to check
now. Okay.
We're done with questions, actually. Can we get an indication? Are we okay to go to 1:30? Let me just confirm that. You are not aware. Is the rest of us? Are we okay?
Yes.
We will get the answers in any event in writing. That will help us. Let's proceed. You can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. I would just request that the NPA then to respond to the questions that are relating to their questions. Just very briefly, especially in the issues of the statistics. And
It's going to be very difficult for me to respond to the statistics, and I was going to ask that we defer specifically the questions with regard to the statistics in writing, because we have to contextualize those statistics.
That one is
because some of the information from NOC may not correspond with what we are keeping as the NPA. I mean, that was one of the challenges that was highlighted in Alex Kambula's presentation with regard to misalignment of indicators in relation to statistics. So if we can just give that opportunity. Just to also satisfy Honourable Member Jerry that even though we are in acting positions, we are actually in acting positions with the experience in relation to that work that we are doing. So just because we are acting, that doesn't mean that we are not experienced to deal with the issues that come out of the positions that we are acting in. So I do get that acting positions are problematic, but people are placed in those positions that can actually do the work, that are dedicated, that are interested in doing the work that holds that particular position. But I just wanted to reassure you that just because we are active doesn't mean that we don't know what we are doing in relation to the work that we are actually responsible for. So just on that point. Then with regards to, I'm going to comment in part on something that SAS would respond to, because it's something that has come up with regards to the attrition of cases. So yes, it is so that the number of matters that are reported at the police stations, that it is higher than the numbers that actually translated to matters on the court roll. And as Admiral Breitenbach has indicated, a number of those matters are undetected, and there's a number of reasons for those, because the perpetrators cannot be identified by the actual victims, and as a result, there's already a number or percentage of those matters that do not get to court. When they, as indicated, I think, by one of the comments also with the designated health facilities, where the victims go to the designated health facilities and the judicial centres, very often a number of them don't want to actually report a matter. they want the services in relation to the medical dental examination and the accompanying medication to prevent HIV. So they don't necessarily report those matters at the designated health facilities or the TCCs in order to be able to report a matter. With the services that we do provide at the designated facilities like the TCCs, it is set up in such a way to encourage them to almost report, but at the reporting stage, many of them do not want to, and we do follow up with them to want to report the matter at the late, but it is there. Choice, and we cannot force, and that is part of having that whole victim-centered approach. So that is some of the reasons as to why those matters do not translate into matters actually being on the court roll. But it's very difficult for us to give you firm percentages in relation to that. It could be about as much as 30% or more of those matters. So just in relation to that particular, my colleague from SAS would be able to maybe just confirm more in terms of what specifically is referred to with regards to the undetected. You mentioned about the specific, Then also with regards to the ADR issue, I was actually anticipating that, and it's something that the DM has also expressed a huge concern over in the last while, and he's taken it up with the NPA as well. So with regards to the ADRM, we do have a specific policy in place. It's not in place for sexual offences. It's a general ADRM policy. There's a particular purpose in terms of how the NPA has to manage ADRM. It must be in consultation with the complainant in that matter. It's not something that the prosecution can instigate. It's usually at the insistence of the victim in that particular matter. There's a lot of contention in relation to should it be used for sexual offences or should it not be used for sexual offences. As was explained previously to other members of government, when it comes to looking at the sexual offences victim, we all speak about a victim-centred approach. So if a victim comes to you as a prosecutor and says, but I don't want to proceed with this matter anymore, there's consultation, there's, you know, you try to persuade her, look, this is a serious matter, you need to proceed, and so on and so on. But if the decision is such that they do not want to proceed, the next step would be you engage either with legal aid South Africa or with a private attorney. You know, does the accused want to plead guilty? You may be negotiating that way. Sometimes we are successful, sometimes we are not successful. If we are not successful, what do we do? Do we just withdraw that matter, let the complainant go on her way, let the accused back into the community, or do we look at an alternative manner in which we can deal with that particular matter, and that would then resolve in your ADR and your alternative dispute resolution mechanism. And that has to, like as it belongs in a particular matter, it has to have the prosecutor's involvement, the investigating officer, because he obviously knows more about that particular case. There also needs to be a reputable claim in that particular perpetrator can go to, and that then will be managed either by an organisation like NICRA or other organisations in other provinces. But it's not specifically for sexual offences, and the numbers for ADRMs are not that high for sexual offences specifically, but they certainly not encouraged almost as a way, this is your first resort. It's more a last resort when you've actually followed certain other steps. So that's just, I wonder if we give a specific statistic for that, but we can look and sort of see, because it's not calculated sexual offences, murder, it's a total number of ADRMs of the NPA capture, so we want to be able to provide on that. Just want to see if there's something else with regards to that I can answer very, very quickly. Oh, yes, very importantly, the NPA has very recently started a campaign on recruitment of our prosecutors. So just to link that up with the point about the specialist prosecutors, we are not able to give you the numbers for specialist prosecutors at this stage, but we can give you the vacancy rate. And along with Charlie, we were not able to provide those numbers because the person that was supposed to provide the numbers to us, we've been in constant communication with Abba Kambula over the last 2 days, was not available. We actually got those numbers this morning, but it's for the whole establishment, not specifically the specialists or the sexual offence. I can give you those numbers now if you are interested, or I can refer that to the report. But I do have those available, and apologies that it was not included in the presentation previously, but we were struggling to get those numbers over the last 2 days. So just to satisfy the committee, the recruitment processes for various levels within the prosecution has started. So it starts from your district court prosecutors all the way up to your advocates in the High Court. So it will basically be a progression, just to answer Breitenbach's question with regards to the specialization. So you will start employing staff for the district court. The district court will move over to the regional court. The regional court that's already been prosecuted in sexual offences will move to the sexual offences court, you know, if you have a dedicated service at that court. So it's going to be almost a progression within the organisation in terms of how. So you're not going to put a totally new person coming into the NBA to actually put in a sexual offences court. You're going to look for that specialisation in order to meet that particular need. I'm not sure if there's anything else that you want to answer immediately. That was just very, very quickly what I could remember in terms of... yeah. And then also just in relation to the DM's comment with regards to the appeals and reviews, that is something the NPA is also looking into, especially with those centres who are doing the huge disparity between the offence and the actual sentence, specifically for sexual offences. So I hope I've covered some of the issues that were troubling the members.
The Chair, I think that the NPA can release the numbers, the figures of your vacancy.
Let's let you know because what we're interested in is the actual, we're talking about the blueprint compliant sexual offences courses, and then the general sexual offences court that does regional sexual offences but not blueprint compliant. But they are still special.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you want. But rather do it afterwards, because you don't have those ones. Thanks.
Understood, Chairperson. I would like now staff to quickly respond to your question.
Just identify
yourself. Yes, thank you, Mr. J. I'm Olivia Hayes from the Chariot of FCS in the Western Press. My apologies, I was only informed last night that I should be here because my principal in the office would not be here. In terms of the presentation, I would just like to know, because we might have a different understanding of what disposed means, so that it is just clarified for us, because our disposal means something else. That is a document that's going into the archives. So we just need some clarity on what you mean by disposed. In terms of the numbers, I would also suggest that from our department that it comes via report, so that because it includes the whole nationally and not just our province. The victim-friendly facilities, it was indicated in the presentations that it is 1,071 at police stations countrywide. Now the questions that was being asked was where is this in fact working. I can only answer, or to a certain extent answer, for the Western Cape. We have got 151 stations. The facilities are at the station, but whether it's working depends also on your frontline services, who is in the CSC, whether they're taking the people through, and the type of questions that they ask, or whether ICS is immediately being contacted to deal with the victim. So that, I think, from our national office, that should also be answered as to whether it is effective nationally. In terms of all the other questions from Honourable Breitenbach with regards to undetected cases being withdrawn, I think that should also come into the report, because we're not just talking about us here in the Western Cape. A question that was asked by the lady opposite me, sorry I didn't get the surname, about preventative measures in terms of services that's being rendered. In the FCS mandate, it is part of our duties to do, and even for social crime prevention, that we should do awareness, whether it is at the school, whether it's at churches, but in the communities we do awareness, and quarterly we have to report on what we have done, how many people we have addressed, whether it was a radio interview or speaking directly to people. So we do have things in place to do in terms of the preventative measures. And then I just need to come back to the issue of the frontline services. That is an ongoing process to educate our members, because every time there's a new intake and people come from a different background, so it needs to be constantly, even the older members, there's constant efforts to just get them on par and just to remind them how to deal with our victims of crime, especially gender-based violence. And that is, I think at the moment, that is all that I can answer on, because the rest will have to come from our head office in terms of our staff.
May I just, in addition to that, Chairperson, to say that we will also be bringing the list of the victim-friendly rooms of staff. Now, which is going to be, I think that the last, it is the NRSO to respond just to two questions.
Thank you, Chair. With one question that came from, I think it's Honourable Horn, how can we be sure that there is a clean register? In the previous years, the register was found not to be having accurate information, valid or complete. However, we have the Office of the AG auditing the register every year. And then last year, in order to rectify the audit that was found to be inaccurate, we had to come up with a project. And that project sought to validate all the information in the register, to take out all the invalid entries that were made previously because of system errors, wherein you will find that adult persons were actually captured into the register. So the data cleanup project sought out to clean up the whole data that was in the register, so that to ensure that everything that is in the register is meant to be there. All the people that are in the register are meant to be there. So currently I can confirm that last year, during 2018 and 19, the Office of the AG audited the information in the register, and all the information was found to be valid, accurate and complete. So currently the information that is there is valid, accurate and complete. And some of the questions, like when the NRSO published, read by Honorable Janki, the DM has already spoken to that. And then he spoke about the other information of over 7,000 cases that were discarded. Those cases were not discarded in the register. However, it's all those cases that we could not obtain source documents. So we are currently doing the data verification process through the courts, wherein we are obtaining some of the information that were not included in the register. And one other question that was raised by Honorable Breitenbach, what are the major challenges and how are we addressing that? The major challenge that we are foreseeing now is when the legislation is assented to, thus expanding the scope of the register, it will require us to have more resources that we can be able to operate such a register and be able to respond within the stipulated time in the Act. And one last question that was asked by you, Chairperson, is how to access the clearance certificates. We've got on our website, they can be able to click on the NRSO forms, and then on the NRSO forms, there are forms that are the J738 and the J731, which is an application in respect of particulars. For own particulars, when a person is applying on their own behalf, and another one where a person is applying on behalf of another. So it's two forms that are attached for that purposes, and we are currently accepting the applications for clearance. As you would have seen now, we have already processed over 3,700 certificates. And the additional information obviously will be deferred to the report. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, Chair, to interrupt, just technicality, I just want to make a note. The lady was introduced as the registrar, but I missed her name.
Is it give your name?
It's Ntombi Machila. Machila, M-A-T-J-I-L-A.
All right. Let me just say that on the earlier point you made, the Honourable Jenny's question was more the general phenomena of vacancies. Just remember, not with you specifically or personally. We know, luckily I know all of you very well. These are all practitioners in the field, and they happen to be management now. But the point was more about the whole issue of long-acting purposes. We all have that concern. What we're going to do, the rest of the question, if you can submit it, how long do you need? A week? Is that fine? 7 days? 7 days? Thank you very much. Yeah. Yeah. 7 days, you should have it. Yeah, 7 days, so because we don't want to, information to be sterile. We're right in that mode. We're going to 16 days of activists of no violent women. Want that information so we can deal with it. Edward, Honorable Jelly, almost there. You had one or two questions you wanted to add quickly.
Yeah, it's only one. Fortunately, the one it has to do with what she just answered, but I'll just clarify. But the only one that I wanted to add, I'm not sure if maybe that one will go straight to the minister, because it has to do with the Constitutional Review Committee. Because she mentioned some other things that she feels that in the Constitution there might be some, those are the things that are not mentioned in the Constitution, and that maybe might assist you in making sure that the implementation is. Yes. So can you, in relation to the subject, can you identify those and then give them to the minister? And let's look into them and see how maybe we can do a submission to the other committee, because it doesn't belong here, but it's important. Lastly, Chairperson, I think the second one that I was going to do, it was going to suggest, on the very same issue, yes, you have covered me, that maybe you understood the issue of acting in a certain conversation. My point is that we want people who are purely dedicated to this. Remember, even Honorable Janti mentioned, this is a presidential project. So even if there are problems, the Deputy Minister will give us a report in terms of this. But it will be good for us to get people who are dedicated to this work. In terms of Act, we know the requirements of Act. You can be overloaded, because remember, when you act, you have to do your job that you are hired for and also do this. So mine, it was in terms of that. It's not in the manner of undermining people who are acting, but we want this to be taken with the seriousness it's supposed to be. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. We will then get that the information within 7 days. I just want to point out and conclude, we'll give DM a chance to complete the meeting, that we apologize again for the, that was a late decision. We recognize that. We happen to have a gap in our program. We don't want to call you later, it was the end of the year, or we already late in December, because we know you're going to be, all of you can be very busy in the campaign starting a few days time. But we will certainly at our next engagement make sure that the full component is properly invited. And then apologies to the members about the support on behalf of our chairperson. Jim, thank you.
So you've covered the one issue, which was obviously if notice is short, it's more difficult to get people because they've got other commitments. And in this case, it was short notice because you'd have the gap. I think this meeting was meant to be later in the year, as you said. But I think the main point is that I want to make is our challenge, I think, very much is regarding implementation. You would have seen from Advocate Kambula's report everything that's meant to be happening in the courts, particularly, or at police stations. The question is it happening? And I do think it would be useful for MPs to go and visit courts. And I mean, obviously, when you visit courts, often a sexual offence, because courts may be sitting in Canberra, so you can't go and barge in But have a look at the courts and the police stations in your constituency and tell us where there are weaknesses.
Thank you, dear. We'll certainly take our constituents to the courts to visit them. We'll make that during the next year. Thank you very much for your patience. We know we took half an hour, 30 minutes into your lunch hour, but the subject matter itself calls for it. I'm sure all of us had to WhatsApp and say we delayed. But thank you very much. Let's get off to where we need to be. Thank you to the department. We really appreciate the information that you shared.